This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
What's up, Duke fans? Welcome to the Devil's Den podcast. I'm your host, Josh Smith, joined by my co-host, Raul and Shu, coming at you after another stellar performance down in Florida. So took care of a pretty depleted Miami team, 84-55. Nice to see you had five guys in double figures. We've talked a little bit about the assist to turnover ratio. Nice to see that kind of on the right side of things, 19-10. Shot the ball well. Another big game from Flip. Pretty much in a blowout like this, it's fun to talk about because you have good games for just across the board for the most part here. But let's just kind of jump in. I don't think we need to go too much play by play here, but I will toss it to y'all initially. To me, the game was kind of pretty much decided early in the first half. It's 16-14, and then Duke just blitzes them, right? We go on a 13-0 run. Caleb Foster has two huge threes in that stretch, and then maybe the play of the game when Jared just kind of goes coast to coast almost and just like hammers one in the lane. I don't know, man. Like, I'll toss it to you there. I thought Miami didn't play great. Omir was kind of missing a bunch of bunnies down there early, but I just thought this might have been like up there with, I don't know, like the most locked in we've seemed to be in terms of just like from the gate, just prepared, like the defense was on point, offensively things were clicking. What did y'all take of that? I know we were talking a little bit offline, Raul, but the guys seemed like we had like a little more verve, a little more energy, a little more like kind of pep in your step here. Did you see anything of that? We looked fresh.
Yeah, man. I think like, yeah, I mentioned that to you, but it was like, it was not just like one guy. It was like Flip looked like he was moving faster and better. He had that great move to go baseline and then just hammer it. Which that surprised me too. You know, and then Jared with that dunk, like never seen anything from him like that. Mark Mitchell like looked super springy. I mean, he's been getting more kind of springy and athletic and healthy looking as the year has gone on. But just one example, like at the end of the first half, Miami misses a three and Mark just like skies for the rebound. And I haven't really seen that kind of lift from him. So yeah, just across the board, Proctor as well for coming back from a concussion. Like he was moving really well, pushing the ball fast in transition.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Which is weird at this time of year because we've been struggling so much with injuries. So I don't know what they did in the last 4 days or whatever, but it helped.
Yeah. And maybe it's something in the water out there because, again, it's this trend from a sample size of 2 years here, but things start seem to click for John Shire teams later in the season, right? We saw it last year with that 10-0 or that 10-game winning streak. Won't jump too far ahead yet, but we've won five straight. There's five more left. Maybe you see something else in the water down there. Shu, what was kind of your initial thoughts before we jump into some other stuff? Just kind of the energy, effort level.
Yeah, I mean, I thought this was our most complete game of the season as far as that goes. you know, a lot of times, and I mentioned it in the last podcast about showing the guys the footage from last year. If you go back and watch that game last year, like Miami just blitzed us defensively when we just bullied us basically, and we folded, honestly. Yeah. I mean, and so watching the game last night, it's like we came out aggressive on offense, but we were aggressive on defense too. Like we're not going to have you do that. Like you guys said, I think it was the most intense kind of pressure that we've played. I mean, the guys just seemed to be all over the place. The defense we was playing, Jay mentioned playing like the gap defense, you know, just being in the right spots when we're playing all these switches, the rotations, it looked great. Now, granted, you know, they're missing Nigel Pack and they're missing Matthew Cleveland. That's like 30 points for them. But, you know, that place it's been a hall of horrors for us. So it was nice to kind of go down there and 30 piece those guys and kind of everybody be clicking.
Yeah. I mean, in the past, they probably just could have ran a Wooga Omir ball screen over and over and over, and it wouldn't have mattered who was out there, right? Like, it just seemed, to that, I'll go a little bit out of order here just because we're talking about it. The defensive switching, we've talked about that a little bit. Raul, I know you said that's a good look for us. I mean, our rotations were like, we missed maybe one or two there, but we were trapping the post like we were like on the catch there, switching just about everything. I mean, there is a point in the game where up like 27, Ryan Young is hard hedging to like half court and then sprints back down to catch his man on the post to deny it. It's like just incredible, like effort right there, right? Like
the one he sprinted down just to knock away, you know, a pass.
And then he did another one. That's a separate play. Yeah.
But you're up 30 and that guy's doing that. Lots of props to Ryan. I mean, last year I thought he had the hustle play of the season. Forgot what game it was, but he had a offensive rebound that he was fighting for under the basket. The ball kind of gets popped out to the 3-point line. And next thing you know, he's out there diving on it too.
Yeah.
And then that play that I'm talking about where he kind of just sprinted. When I think it might have been like a 3-on-1 fast break for them.
And just pokes it right out.
And just pokes it out of bounds. I mean, that's, dude, you're up 30 and you're doing that. That's dedication. That's hustle. That's I love to see it.
Yeah, and 9 rebounds in 10 minutes, right? Like that's
yeah, you see his offensive rating for the game was like 202.
218. Yeah, this was like vintage last year Ryan Young almost for us, right? Like this is what he was doing in those spurts.
And it's interesting because this is not the kind of game where you think he would hold up, right? We've decided to play switching defense basically the entire time. And that is not necessarily Young's forte. Like I've been kind of hammering the drum of like, we should maybe play switching defense even more because it suits our personnel, right? Because Flip's a pretty mobile center. And then some of our guards, I think it just kind of simplifies things for them a little bit. Like I've noticed that Caleb Foster is much better in the switch because he just doesn't have to focus on rotations quite as much. He can kind of just lock in on his man and then, you know, switch when he's called out to switch. And then guys like Sean Stewart and Blake's can like have a little bit better role off the bench if we're switching as well. But you would think that would kind of push Young out of the rotation, but the opposite happened, at least in this game.
I mean,
I wanted to go back to the Flip dunk that Raul mentioned. I mean, I haven't seen that. Is that the most athletic play you've seen out of Flip in 2 years?
Yeah, we just ragged him against Florida State about how he was going up kind of like weak at the rim, right?
And maybe the blue white game at the beginning of the year when he had that dunk flying down the lane, but even that wasn't like, it wasn't contested.
Yeah, but you don't see a 7-footers doing up and unders. You know,
that's Gerald Henderson. Like, that's a, and then
yeah, that reminded me of Henderson versus.
That's a Henderson
Wake
dunk.
Forest,
that's a wingman dunk. Yeah,
I think that was a Wake game.
Yeah, it was Wake on Chaz McFarlane.
Yeah. I mean, just everyone looked fresh, right? I think that I don't really know another way to say it. The energy was just there. The legs were just there. And I don't think it was just like, oh, now they were motivated. Maybe some of those guys were to come down there and say, hey, we got curb stomped here last year. But to see it across the board from every player, like maybe we just took a few days off or something, or just kind of hit the massage, you know, hit the spa.
You guys mentioned it too. I mean, we didn't play anybody heavy minutes this game. It was like, hey,
we only had two guys that play 30 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. So everybody stay fresh. What did you guys think about Jared's dunk? I honestly didn't know he had that in him.
I didn't know he had that in him either.
Did not know. I mean, first career dunk. A poster.
Considering how low his release is on his layups, a lot of times it's like I never thought that he could just one hand through the lane like that.
Because he's such a below the rim player normally. Like he's effective inside now, but he does that with kind of craft and you know those kind of pivots and things like that.
And it's just usually, eight from angles, yeah. Right? Yeah. This is like, nope, I'm going straight middle, dude. And like, you know, granted, Miami's defense was pretty awful. I mean, they were
playing hard. I mean, they were, they were getting up in us and we were just,
they're
countering by their
team defense was bad, right? Like they're individually, they were trying to do it, but then the rotations or what to do on like breakdowns was just not there.
I mean, I thought that their effort showed in how many offensive rebounds they got, which is one thing I did want to bring up. You know, they kind of made us look pretty bad on the defensive glass. I think we had a 64% defensive rebounding rate, which would be kind of near the bottom of Division One. We're normally up more like up at 76 or something like that. So, and I know Miami is surprisingly, given their height, they're a good offensive rebounding team. So maybe I shouldn't be surprised by that, but I thought it, you know, it was probably aggravated by our switching. So that's one thing you do give up a little bit when you start switching like that, is because, you know, then you have Flip like not really under the basket at all times. And so you're asking guys like McCain to rebound really well, which I think he had 4 rebounds in this game. So if he doesn't have 10, then that's just going to give, you know, a good offensive rebounding team like Miami a lot more chances. And that was basically the only way they were even scoring in the first half, was they'd miss their first 2 shots and then they'd get something on a putback from Amir or whatever. Or like, I think Poplar hit a few 3s, but that was about it.
Well, how much of this bad defense, air quotes, Bob, Miami, is just attributed to us shooting the lights out? I mean, you got to think those guys are playing their ass off. And then next thing you know, here's Caleb Foster going back to back for 3, or Jeremy hitting, you know, 3 or 4 in a row, and you just like,
well, and this is what you see deflated when Caleb and Tyrese are both playing at a high level, right? And we haven't seen that like quite, you know, both of those guys have had moments. But when you're able to bring a guy like Tyrese off the bench and he's just that engaged and pushing the ball, and he looked as like he was getting into the lane a lot too. Yeah. Like his cross court passes weren't getting picked off, they were on point.
Yeah, he had a couple of really nice drives too. But yeah, it's just, what it changes is like, instead of having 2 guards you really have to worry about, suddenly you have 4 guards you really have to worry about, right? There's a play in the first half that like summed it up for me, which was like, I think Mitchell's in the center, Flip's in the right corner, he gets the pass, we kick it from Flip to McCain to Foster to Proctor, and Proctor takes a right wing 3 and he misses it, but it was wide open. It's just beautiful ball movement, right? And it's like, you have to worry about all those guys as a defender when they're playing like that.
Right. Yeah. The ball movement was just like some of the best that we've seen. Maybe going back to like Pitt, the first big game, naturally, or some of those. I mean,
shoot, it's like, what I would say to that is like, when we are hitting, obviously we're going to be tougher to defend, but I think a lot of that was created by the ball movement. Like we made good shots for ourselves.
I think it was it Jay Billis on the call? He get a Jay Wright quote that's like, a good shooting team is a good passing team. You know, like
if you guys, might have been Dan Shulman, but
either way. And that makes a lot of sense. I mean, if you can move the ball around and find, you know, was it Jay Wright was also that had the better, best, you know, bestest shot, basically kind of breakdown, like,
And you obviously have to start with the shooters. Like if you don't have shooters, you could pass the ball 30 times and it's not going to matter. But
sure. Yeah.
If you start passing the ball and you already have the shooters in place, that's what unlocks it.
Yeah. Especially when this was like one of the few games that like we've talked to Brian a few times of like unlocking the 5 out. And it's like, it just all seemed to be working here, right? When Foster's able to drive, when McCain's driving, when Proctor's getting into the lane, it just all works, man.
I thought Flip wasn't shot hunting as much either.
Flip was just incredible. Go ahead.
Yeah. He was just catching the ball in the short roll, and I thought his first instinct there was to pass. In fact, there were a couple of plays where I was like, I don't know. I kind of wish you hadn't passed that. You had like a 6'6" guy in the lane, and that's the only opposition you had, and you decided to kick to Foster in the corner, which like, you know, it's fine, but maybe wasn't the best choice there. But I like that instinct better. I like it when Flip is in more of a like facilitator role and he gets his offense more naturally within the flow of things.
You know, he had 4 assists, 1 turnover.
One thing I noticed online last night was, you know, people talking about Amir missing a lot of shots around the rim. I think a lot of that's credit to Flip. Yeah. You know, Flip was on his ass all night.
He had three blocks, yeah. You know, I mean.
And like, even Mark Mitchell, I think John mentioned it, like, we put Mark on him a lot, too. Yep. I think that goes back to John, you know, talking about having to help Flip out here lately. A lot of times we've been able to put Mark on the five, especially if we're switching, because then you know, they're just going to end up running a pick and roll, and Flip's going to end up on the five anyways.
True. Yeah.
I thought Mitchell played a near perfect game on both ends. Yes. He was really good when he was switched out on guards on the perimeter. It was giving like a ton of effort. Yeah. And it was making great rotations and recovering really well to kind of contest around the rim. And he hit yet another top of the key three.
Yep.
Like that is just money for him right now.
I know. He's not taking a ton, but like when he is, he's making them. And he had the anytime you're blocking a 3-point shot too, you know that you're just like you're locked in defensively, right? Like that's it's hard to do that, you know. Like it's not something that you see a ton of.
I think you and I talked offline about just how well he fills in the gaps. Like I was comparing him to Aaron Gordon in Denver, like just that kind of, you know, that big forward who can't really shoot, but is still effective because he's such a good cutter and he understands space so well. And he just kind of operates down there on the baseline and will like fill in the gap at the exact right moment. And, you know, has good hands and is a good finisher. So all that kind of combines, he makes like a nice target. Like Foster's had some great passes to him lately.
Yeah. And he's just his IQ and awareness on both ends, right? Because it's why he's such a good defender and why he's been such a great defender for 2 years without fouling for the most part. You know, I think he did have like three fouls last night, which is not terrible or like even a concern, but that's like a high for him, right? Usually he's in that one or two range. And it's because of just that. Yeah. Like he understands the space on the floor, he understands the dimensions on the floor. It's like Battier-esque in terms of just playing it analytically. I don't know if he does that or not, but it looks that way. Because he played the same way on offense.
Yep.
Because that one pass that you mentioned with Foster, it was kind of off a breakdown. And to me, I'm watching that and it's like, I think it's really hard for Mark to just stay there. And he stays like right like cross court, like in that dunker spot, because the play kind of breaks down. It would be easy for him to kind of clear out or to like move back, but he just kind of stays home and Foster just throws like a nice little bullet to him and he just kind of pump fakes and then gets the dunk. But if he clears out or if he kind of like abandons the play there, you don't get that. But he reads the space and just made it work, man. Made it work. So, yeah. And
even one of his fouls was, I thought, a little questionable, that offensive foul he got there. It seemed like the ref got a little bit bored. He was like really excited to make that call. He like ran 12 feet out on the court. I don't know that ref's name. I apologize. But it was like, they're up 20. Going to call something here.
Yeah, and also one of the threes that they counted. I don't know if they went and changed it. I don't think they did. Dude's foot was definitely on the line. Oh, yeah. So it should have been a 30-piece there. Should have been a 30-piece. Oh, well. But, you know, what are you going to do? Well, let's take a quick break, and then I want to touch on Jeremy Roach right quick and some just kind of broader takes, and then we'll get out of here.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
All right, fellas, let's come back here and let's talk about something that we kind of talked about a lot on the offseason, and I'll take kind of full crow for this. And it's not that I didn't think he was capable of it, but I really wanted to communicate how hard it is to do what Quinn did as a senior. especially for a guy like Jeremy, who's just career numbers shooting wise, they haven't been like bad or anything. But what he's doing this year is just absurd. I mean, like, especially from three, but all the way across the board, like his numbers are up, like literally everywhere across the board. And, you know, people are saying he's turning into Quinn Cook territory. My question for you, Shiro getting first year, has he surpassed Quinn Cook territory, or does that come with the banner?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think that's the end goal is, you know, putting the banner up. He's taken us to a Final Four. You know, he's got that under his belt already. This time, you know, just try to get the job done. That's what Quinn was able to do. You know, just be that solid veteran leader for the younger guys. And, you know, that's what he's been able to do the last 2 years. But this year, you know, nothing short of incredible what Jeremy's been able to do. I hope a lot of fans really, you know, take the time to give him his flowers.
Dude. Yeah,
because the dude didn't have to be here for this long. I mean, we don't have McDonald's All-Americans stick around for 4 years like this.
Not when you was a coach or your coach retires too, yeah, right? Yeah. Like,
yeah, and I mentioned it to him at Media Day, just like the wildness of the ACC that he's been, you know, he's seen however many, you know, Hall of Fame coaches retire going through COVID.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So just had a, you know, wild, like literally one of the worst seasons in Duke basketball history, you know, in that COVID season. And then to get to a Final Four, playing the pressure of Coach K's last year, the pressure of John's first year. But yeah, I mean, just give the guys flowers, man. He's been amazing for us. And it's awesome to see like the growth that he's had over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible, man. It's something that like you couldn't really, I think a lot of fans wanted to just say it because it's just easy to say, oh, you have a shorter point guard that's going to come kind of be a little more off ball as a senior Quinn Cook. But it is really freaking hard to do that. And bro, my question for you is, cause this is where I'm kind of like, should Roach be used more, or do you think just the value from his efficiency where it's at right now is just the perfect role for him?
Well, I mean, I think Jay Billis kept saying the word mature on the broadcast. And I totally agree with that. Like there's just something like so economical and efficient about Roach's game right now. And I don't mean efficient just in terms of shooting, which obviously he's been absurdly efficient on that level, but just like there's nothing forced, right? He's taking exactly the shots he should take when he should take them. We've talked about he's content to go for essentially three quarters of a game without really shooting or scoring if that's just the way the game's playing out. But then he'll also, you know, hit three straight threes in the first half if he's getting the shots. So I do like the way he's just kind of filling in the gaps and letting everybody else kind of like succeed and thrive around him. I would like to see his three-point attempts go up a little bit. I think you got to be taking more than four a game when you're shooting 45% or whatever it is. Might be even be better than
I think
that
it's
right
like 46 now. Yeah.
After he hit what, four or five last night, maybe only four or six because he had that one air ball, which was funny that the crowd was mocking him for that while they're down 23. It's like, maybe let that one go. But anyway, yeah, I just think, I think you could get up to at least like six. Yes, your efficiency would probably take a little bit of a hit if you started doing that. But let's say you slip 2 or 3%. That's still a very, very worthwhile shot.
Yeah. I mean, if you're taking seven threes a game at 45%, that's like elite.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't think you're going to keep that up, but if you could at least stay above like 38 to 40.
Yeah.
But yeah, to come back to the idea of like, is he at Quinn's level or has he surpassed him? What I would say is it depends on what we're measuring, right? So purely on court, I think he's better than senior Quinn. When you look at the three-point percentage and then what else he gives you, like Quinn, by the time he was a senior, was mostly kind of a weirdly a 3-and-D guy, which sounds strange to say for a guard, but like a lot of his shots were coming from three-point range. But I feel like, you know, Roach is just giving you like so much more in terms of like versatility on offense, like that empty side pick and roll we run over and over again with him. And then defensively, I think he's at least Quinn's equal, if not better. But the leadership thing, it's like they're very different personalities. So maybe it's not fair to compare them that way. I think Jeremy's been a good leader, but he's not the kind of vocal like, you know, everybody who listens to this podcast has heard Quinn at the beginning of the show every time, right? Duke mm-hmm. is never the underdog. Duke is never the underdog. You know, yelling, pumping up the team. I don't see Jeremy doing things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Quinn was like everyone's favorite uncle or something, right? Like he was like that kind of persona. But yeah, man, I will just end that segment there. Just appreciation for Jeremy Roach at this point. I mean,
I meant to mention he's doing it all while injured, essentially, too. Like, I don't think he's been fully healthy all year.
Yeah. I mean, he's looking better, but he's still not looking quite like that. Like, to me, when he's super healthy, it's just you're putting him in a little ball screen and he's just like manipulating the hell out of your defense, right? Because like his mid-range is just so money. And now he can get to the rim and do whatever he wants. Just a heck of a player, man. He's got one more year left and like, come on back, brother. Yeah. I'll take it. I'll take it all day.
I mean, look, if he moved on, you know, it is what it is. We only ask 4 years out of you at the max anyways.
If he comes back, could the number go up? Like, ooh, forever? Like, could it go up in the rafters forever? If he makes, let's say, maybe he doesn't win a title, but let's say he goes back to another Final Four. If he comes back next year too, then the chances of like being able to do that are astronomically high. His other numbers in terms of the like historical criteria, I don't know if he's ever going to be able to do any of that, like a National Player of the Year or like break a record or anything. But there's a new coach, right, who then gets to kind of set that standard. And you're not going to get many more guys like this, especially if you get year five. That's going to put him in a category statistically wise. I don't know, man. It'd be cool.
I think, you know, it would help to get some like national or at least ACC recognition. I do like that Billis and Shulman mentioned him as a potential like first team all ACC on the broadcast, because I haven't really heard him talked about a lot. So it's nice to hear him at least get shouted out as potentially being among that top five in the league. But I think like you would kind of, he'd have to either win a title one of those 2 years, or he'd have to come back and just like completely dominate, like, you know, 22 points a game kind of thing. Cause
right now, you win a title and get most outstanding player. That could maybe be, you know, now Singler didn't get that, but that was a different kind of time then where you were still not really doing stuff like that.
And even Singler's case is just like so much better because of him being top 10 in so many categories, right? And Roach is just not going to get there because of his first 2 years.
Yeah, that's fair. Will be interesting to see how that plays. Personally, if I'm John and he takes me to the promised land, that jersey's absolutely going in the rafters, right? Like the just pressure valve release that you just immediately have with that. But all right, let's kind of move on here for sake of time. Let's talk briefly about the ACC standings here, fellas. I don't want to really preview Wake since we just played them like a week ago. Everyone should be pretty familiar with that. It was a tough game then. It's probably going to be a tough game now. But I just mentioned we've won five straight. There's five left to go. We're sitting at 12-3 in the conference. I think almost all of us predicted Duke to win the conference in the preseason. What's our confidence level on that now, Shu? What are you thinking? We're sitting at 12-3, knotted up with UNC. They own the tiebreaker.
For now.
What are you seeing out of this finish here?
So I guess the question is, say we split with Carolina, we win this final home game. Where would the tiebreaker go? It goes to
Virginia.
To Virginia. But okay. And they're playing Virginia
at Virginia. We got them at home. So if they lose and we win.
But it doesn't necessarily go to Virginia. It goes to the next
place. That's true. It could be Wake. It could be Wake.
So that's what I'm wondering about. Because you look at Virginia's remaining schedule, Ken Pom's got them projected to lose three of their last four. I mean, they got Carolina at home. Ken Pom saying they're gonna lose that one. They got Boston College on the road. For some reason, he's saying they're gonna lose that one. And then the game at Duke, he's got them losing. So if Wake slides in, then that makes Saturday's game for us at Wake super important. So I'm gonna stick with us. I'm gonna stick with my prediction that we're gonna get it done.
Okay. Okay. What about you, Ro? How do you feeling about things shaking out here?
Yeah, I'm not as worried about Wake taking over that third place spot in the ACC. I'm actually more worried about, you know, everything else breaking right. I just feel like too many things have to go right for us to be tied with UNC in record or one game ahead of UNC in record entering that last game to be able to kind of like lock it up.
Yeah. Well,
both of us have three home games and two away games left.
Yeah. Right.
So, you know, you got the similar profile there.
UNC's schedule, just the remaining schedule is easier.
Yeah.
And, I mean, because we got that at Wake, Virginia at home, at State. You know, they have Virginia away, which could be tough. And if you can catch them right, then, you know, sure. Yeah. But Virginia just kind of got the brakes beat off of them by Virginia Tech. So maybe you're hoping there's some motivation there, hopefully, because if they don't win that, or if North Carolina does win that, then I think they probably, you know, they might could just win it right there, because I don't see them losing to Miami State or Notre Dame at home.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That ain't happening. Maybe a State does something crazy, but we just know that Carolina just little boys them so hard, dude, that it's
And it all kind of comes down to like what version of Virginia you have kind of going forward. Because we've seen them rattle off like 10 straight games in the middle of ACC play and look like really good. And then just recently they've looked like trash for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, they do match up pretty well with UNC historically. So that could be something there that could help, because they're so good at controlling tempo. And UNC, you know, whether it's under Roy, whether it's under Dean, or whether it's under Hubert Davis, always wants to push, right? And this year, I think it's the fastest they've played under Hubert. So, you know, if they could kind of control tempo, you know, they could make the game kind of ugly and maybe pull one out. And they have played a lot better at home. So that would be Duke's hope, right? You really need Virginia to beat UNC for us to have any chance.
Yeah. I mean, really, it's this Saturday and then our matchup Saturday, that a couple Saturdays later against them, right? Because this Saturday is the big one. It's us at Wake, them at Virginia. If both of us win, that'll be kind of crazy, because I would be more entailed to think both of us could lose this Saturday going on the road in these matchups. But if this could make or break, right? Like if we win at Wake and they lose at Virginia, that really puts us in a position to where it's like, then even if you drop that State game, who cares? Right? Like, it could be okay. You just have to beat Carolina.
Yeah. Personally, I don't really care that much about winning the ACC, especially since we got it off our back recently in 2022, because there was that like long drought.
Yeah,
I think for me, it's all about like the optics of it, I guess, for like the selection committee. I think that, you know, it's not going to bump us up a seed line or anything winning, but I just think it looks a lot better.
They say that doesn't matter. I mean, and they've proven it. I mean, we won the ACC tournament last year. And still,
well, I know the tournament doesn't matter, but yeah, I'm talking about the regular season.
Right. And they say that they don't look at it like that. It's an unbalanced schedule, so they don't look at your conference standings as the, you know, a metric for
seeding. I'd like to know what they are looking at, because Carolina's still a two seed. And I think
it matters, because I think that ACC being one of the, you know, historically great Power Five conferences, even though they are down, like I can see them wanting to give a two seed to the winner of that conference.
Right. I think that's fair. And maybe the optics of it, where they don't care so much if you don't win it, but if you don't, then you're looking at like, well, does this team deserve it? They couldn't even win the ACC in a down year, or like whatever like that, right? This is a preseason top five team, couldn't get it, you know? So maybe optic wise, it could help us there. Personally, if we finish second, but we just beat Carolina, then I'm cool with that, right?
Yeah, if we get wins over Carolina and Wake, or Carolina and UVA, I think we're in about as good a place as we could hope, given the fact that we started the season 5-3.
Yeah.
You know, that's something I did want to bring up before we kind of get out of here, is like, we started 5-3. We've won 16 of the last 18. We're now up to 8 on KenPom. You know, just I actually went back and compared us to the 2022 team on the same day of 2022. So like February 22nd. We were actually a little bit higher than them on KenPom, a little higher in the national rankings. Offensive defensive splits are nearly identical. So take that for whatever it's worth. Obviously, that 2022 team had Paolo Banchero, and they had wins over Gonzaga and Kentucky. We don't have anything that impressive, but we have some nice wins, and you know, the record is about the same too. So I feel like for all the hand wringing at the beginning of the season, we're actually kind of in a pretty good place right now.
Yeah, I think a lot of fans wrote us off a little too quick.
Yeah.
You know, and me particularly, I was part of that. The Georgia Tech loss at that time, I thought, you know, I don't know if this is the Final Four team. I don't see us doing a lot at March. Well,
we're all still adjusting to it, too. Yeah. Right? We're so used to 40 years of coming out of the gate and just being able to blitz like the number two, three, four, five team in the country, like year after year, right? And like, we're so used to being able to see Kay take us three and go grab Evans and Pye and turn that into a top five offense. Right? Like, he literally had 2022 as the number one offense in the entire country. Now, granted, they had a 50th defense, which John could probably do something like inverse of that, maybe. But, you know, and so that takes a little bit for us to adjust to. Right? Like, I think that takes a little bit of, you know, just for the fans, you're just not used to starting 5-3.
I also think there's a little bit of kind of downplaying of all the injury stuff, like, oh, we have so many five stars, there's so much talent, it shouldn't matter, right? But like the Pittsburgh game, we're missing Jeremy Roach and Mark Mitchell. Those are statistically, like, on the year, our two best players, or if not, depending on what you look at, Flip would be up there too, obviously, but two of our best three, right? Like, I don't see how you can expect any team, I mean, look at Miami last night. I don't see how you can expect any team to play well without two of their
take
30
points off of their
And to the best defenders too, right?
So I mean shout to John, shouts to the team. I mean, they've turned into a group in these last month or two that's just been really fun to watch to see the growth, to see the development, to see a guy like Jared McCain, to see Foster kind of keep continuing to come along. What we saw from Mitchell in November to see what Mark has done in January and February is just like ridiculous, dude. Like, teams were not even guarding him. And now he's our most impactful player, arguably. So,
like, we don't lose that Arizona game if we have this version of Mitchell.
Yeah. And we shouldn't even have lost it anyway. No, right. Like, we had the game. It's just, it bounced the other way. We didn't get the stop that we needed, gave up that and one, and then kind of shot ourselves in the foot there. But,
and the Georgia Tech game, you know, in Atlanta, Mark gets the dunk and puts us up four.
The technical,
you know, the taunting tech, and then we go down with that. I mean, it'd be nice to have that one back right now.
Yeah.
I think I saw we were like one of only three total teams that has not lost a game by double digits. So for whatever that's worth, you know, again, all this caveat that the ACC is weak and all that stuff. We played a lot of bad teams, but even in the games we have lost, we've been competitive.
Yeah. And if you just go back to last year, we lost
at least three times, right?
Five times by double figures.
And at least two of those were like horrible losses, like 25.
81-59, 84-60, 75-56, 65-52. Those are pretty gross scores. Not what you want. So, just cool to see, you know, shouts to the squad, shouts to, you know, John in particular. But let's get out of here. I guess before we do, we at least should give a little bit of prediction here on the hot seat. Y'all taking Duke to go 3-0 in this road trip here? I mean, I said we're going to split with Wake. I'm going to stick with that, not because I'm down on the team, and I'm not going to feel bad about it if we do. It's just going to be a tough game to play. They're going to want some revenge. I think Wake's good. They're 21st on KenPom. I'll say we lose a close one there, but not that I'm, you know, I could see us winning it just because we're playing so well. But what do y'all think, Roel? You taking Duke to win?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just riding high, I guess. It's hard not to after like a 30-point win winning five straight or whatever it's been. But when you look at like how we played over the last five games, I think we're like third on Torvik overall in the entire country. So I just think like even since that Wake game, we're playing better. Since the last Wake game. So yeah, give me Duke. It doesn't make any sense logically. I mean, they missed their first 10 or 11 threes and we still kind of barely won that game. So, you know, my head says that it being on the road, you assume Wake's going to shoot better at home. You assume that the free throw kind of discrepancy would favor them a little bit more. Like, it would not surprise me at all if they won. It would not even surprise me if they won by like 15 and it was like one of our lesser performances, right? But I don't know, just kind of riding the momentum theory here, and I'm gonna pick Duke.
Okay.
It's gonna be a close game. I'll say Duke by like 6 or 7. Don't have an exact score, but like, you know, be like 79-72 or something like that.
Okay. Yeah. To be fair, KenPom has it as a 1-point Duke win, which pretty much just means it's a toss up at this point. Shu, where are you at here? Where are you at with it?
Yeah, I'm pretending like the Miami game didn't happen because they were down 2 starters. I think if that would cloud my judgment a little bit. I was at the Duke Wake game in Durham, and you know, Silas did whatever he wanted. Reed picked up those 2 early fouls. I don't see that happening again. Carr, all those guys that normally hit threes just weren't making them. Hildreth didn't have a great game. I kind of feel like all that stuff's going to get flipped around, and I'm going to take us to just barely go down 79-77.
Okay. Yeah. That's about how I see it. And again, I think it's a coin flip game. It could go either way. I don't think it's going to say anything good, or it would say something really good, obviously, if you go win and you win 3 on the road, but it's tough to win on the road, right? So it's, I think just winning those first two just puts us in such a great place, right? Like,
we wanted to win 2 out of 3 right here, right? Like, that's what, if you would have
told us the first one. So,
perfect. Yeah,
absolutely. Because if you do go win that, then you come home for Louisville, Virginia, and then you go back on the road for just one more. So it's a big time, big momentum shift either way, I guess. If you win it, you're in the driver's seat. So we'll see. But fellas, let's get out of here. Go ahead and wrap this one up. In the meantime, you know, you all rate, review, subscribe. You can find us on the boards at thedevilsden.com. You can email us at thedevilsdenpod@gmail.com. You can find us on X/Twitter @devilsdenpod247. Keep the faces strong and the verb high.